99.5 FM WBAI New York and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock in New York City. Stay tuned for Back of the Book, the program you just heard. Labrish with Haptah Selassie will be back next week following the work of the Midnight Ravers. That is at 2 a.m. and Back of the Book at 5 a.m. New York City time. Go there. Da, 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 da.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top of the line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
Predicting that it's 5 o'clock in the morning and you're listening to All. Will Putin be stopped, or is there a nuke in all of our futures? Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
And how the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
Indeed. And we're going to talk about various things here on this program. You can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. Yeah, that's it, glib.com. I remember how to spell it. Oh, good. Where you can look at things up there. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that. It is indeed a link. And you'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. And we do a new web page for every program. And so you can look around there and see what we're saying at that moment. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 109th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program is not as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And, of course, the top headline for the entire planet Earth is that we are holding at the astronomical figure of 126 followers on Twitter. Ah, how could we find so many people on Twitter? It's just amazing, that gigantic number. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, October 12th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 617,551,975 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,545,632. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 96,378,401, and the death toll in America was 1,059,521. So 6,182 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago? Is that possible? This is amazing. See, right now, we're not sure, but I'm not sure about this. I mean, I wonder, did the Johns Hopkins website have a glitch? Or did the deaths from COVID-19 in America more than double in this past week? We're going to have to look at these figures and see if there's a problem with them before the next radio program. That's the best we can do on that. And the pandemic is not over, no matter what Joe Biden says. But a lot of people are behaving as if it were. And by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. And this was all mostly preventable. The Russian invasion of Ukraine is still ongoing. The Ukrainian army has been very successful in reclaiming Ukrainian territory that had been invaded and occupied by Russia. And, of course, they're using the American HIMARS artillery rocket system. Wow, does that thing ever make a big difference? And it shows you what artillery can do. I mean, I've known about this. I had a commanding officer in basic training who was an old artillery guy, and we got regaled with stories. And yeah, thinking about it and then seeing stuff later on myself, yeah, artillery is a big bleeping deal these days, especially. You know, it's a thing where you can deliver high explosives far away, and these days with great precision. Used to be you shot it off and said, boy, I hope it goes somewhere near the people we want to hurt. These days, you can basically put it in the guy's hip pocket. So, oh boy, yeah, it's really showing the power of this precision artillery. And, of course, the Russians seem to have rather primitive artillery. They're not able to target the way the American systems can. So they don't need to target. They just say, hey, there's a residential neighborhood. Let's start firing shells into it. And that's what they do. Anyway, so the Ukrainians have been really kicking ass in their war of resistance against Russia. As a result, Russian dictator Vladimir Putin has now lost face. There is no doubt. You can't say he hasn't lost face anymore. He has. It's an embarrassment to him. And as a malignant narcissist, he abhors being embarrassed. And so now he is blaming his underlings for the draft that's got thousands of men of various ages fleeing Russia in an attempt to avoid that draft. Oh, man, there are these long lines to get the hell out of Russia. Some of them are going into, ironically, Georgia, which Russia previously had attacked and taken parts of. And they're going into other countries, too. And they're just getting the hell out of Russia as much as they can. There was one guy who the lines are, it's a gigantic traffic jam, and the lines are many miles long and they take forever. So the guy said, it's possible, gee whiz, they may just shut the border entirely because they're leaking all these men that they're trying, all these draft age men. So he had a bicycle on the car. He leaves his girlfriend or wife with the car and he gets in the bicycle and he bugs the hell out. And he gets across the border, and now he's waiting for his wife and saying he hopes his wife gets out of there sort of soonish. So that's one of those stories you get to see about what's going on with the real people of Russia. And, oh boy, this is really starting to get strange. And I think in the Times they said there's a comment about Putin is trying to out-crazy everybody else. And Putin, of course, had this phony referendum done in the occupied parts of Ukraine where armed soldiers went to people's houses and apartments. And they demanded that these people vote on whether they want where they live to be a part of Russia or not. You can vote yes or no. And, you know, gee, I think we know what the armed men want you to say. Of course, this is not a secret ballot. Even if it were, the ballots are going to be counted by Putin's people. So, yeah, this is obviously phony. Everybody who's not in Russia has denounced it. And it's obviously just a lot like what Hitler did after he became chancellor, and after Paul Hindenburg died, because they had made Hitler chancellor in January of 1933. In what was it, June of 1934. Paul Hindenburg dies. He was the president of the Weimar Republic, which he hated. And so at that point, Hitler, as chancellor of Germany, says, you know what? I should be the absolute dictator. What an amazing idea. And so what he did was he said, we'll have a vote. You'll have a vote. You get to decide, German people, on whether you want to keep this decrepit republic that we've got here, this democracy, this Weimar Republic. You want to keep this thing going, or do you want peace and prosperity with me as the all-high dictator? He didn't call himself dictator. He called himself Führer, which means leader. I would be the leader, all your Führer. And so here we go. Here's the ballot. And the ballot was, yeah, nine. You had to check one of those. And so they had this, and I think it was like 96% of the people voted yeah. Of course, some people noticed that the ballots had serial numbers, and they noted who got what serial number. So as it turned out, I've said this before, I'm saying it again. As it turned out, after the election, which, you know, 96%, obviously he won this phony election he had, Hitler's Gestapo, the state police, collected the no ballots, and they went around visiting people who had voted no because they knew who did it. Interestingly, I'm hearing that the ballots, which have been counted by now, in the Ukrainian areas, are about 96% in favor of being a part of Russia. Oh, gosh. You know, so many parallels from going into Ukraine because there are some Russian speakers there, and you're going to come in and get them and free them from the Nazis. And what Hitler did with Czechoslovakia, which is say, hey, there are these oppressed Germans in there, and we want to go in and free them from these terrible people who are oppressing them, and we will have no further territorial demands after that. This is sort of what Putin had been saying when they seized the eastern part of Ukraine in 2014. And then, and then Hitler and Putin did exactly the same thing. They just said, ah, to hell with it. Let's take the whole thing. Luckily, Ukraine was in a position to resist a lot better than Czechoslovakia was, because the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia was where they had all of their defensive fortifications, and they had to back away from that. And then the Germans came in and they had the defensive fortifications, and then they went beyond the defensive fortifications. And when they marched in March of 39, and it was not much to oppose them there. So they walked in, they took over. Wasn't quite the walk-in that Vladimir Putin had envisioned. So, yeah, there's that. And he was supposed to make a big announcement about all of this on Friday. And he did. And we waited for the we didn't hear the announcement, but we waited for reports of it while we were working on the program. And that sort of made us a little bit late in getting to a lot of stuff here on this program, because, you know, we had to wait for that to happen, and then we had to digest it a little bit. And so we have, this is the latest news we have. Again, this could be a deal of things could change by the time you hear this program on Saturday morning. I mean, we are hours away from the time that this program goes to air. So who knows what's going on, but this is what we've got. And in the announcement, he has declared, of course, as had been thought, four Ukrainian regions as part of Russia. In response, the United States and Great Britain have ordered new sanctions on Russia. They're primarily going after people in the Russian government and oligarchs, which is what they've done before. And after Putin's speech, President Biden declared that the West will not be intimidated by Putin's actions. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian government says 30 people have been killed in a Russian attack on a civilian convoy in Zaporizhia. That's where that nuclear power plant is that the Russians are also making nuclear threats with, sort of making it so that, geez, you know, it would be too bad if we if suddenly you had a gigantic meltdown on the largest nuclear reactor in Europe here. Boy, that'd be too bad. Sort of like the guys with the broken noses who talk funny walking into a store and saying, geez, nice store. It'd be too bad if something bad happened to your windows and, you know, and all of your stock got disappeared. And, you know, boy, a fire could break out in this place real easy. Yeah, that'd be all too bad, wouldn't it? So, yeah, Putin as gangster. And so, they're, except here, you know, a nuclear power plant melting down is a lot worse than the mafia going in and shaking down some guy for protection money. Anyway, Russian forces are at this moment, as we're preparing, as we're starting to record, Russian forces are reported to be partly encircled in the town of Lyman, according to what the New York Times calls a pro-Kremlin proxy leader. So that's one of the, you know, people who the Kremlin puts in there and says, oh, this is just a guy from that area. He's really, you know, a Russian shill. And so they're admitting that at this town of Lyman, they're, you know, partly encircled. And given how well the Ukrainian forces have done versus the Russian forces lately, getting encircled by them, it doesn't look like you're going to last long right there. So we could see another town fall to the Ukrainians, another Ukrainian town falling to the Ukrainians. And so this is something that, I don't know, could this be a triggering event in the mind of Putin? In his speech, it is reported that Putin accused the United States of, quote, Satanism, unquote. I don't know. Is he like really hooking up with those evangelical Christians out west? Jeez, it's their kind of rhetoric. And Putin referred to the West as, quote, the enemy, unquote, which is something that's not really been done quite that blatantly before. So this is a verbal escalation. And President Biden said that Putin's actions to annex the four territories in Ukraine, quote, have no legitimacy, unquote, and that, quote, the United States will always honor Ukraine's internationally recognized borders, unquote. So Putin is trying to play the game of declaring parts of Ukraine to be Russia after his threat that an attack on Russia would be met with nuclear weapons. He also is saying, well, now that we've done this, we would be open to reopening negotiations. Oh, geez, thanks a lot, Vlad. We'll trust you. And, well, things will only get more interesting, it looks like. And we have this really historic situation here where, yeah, he says he's gonna use everything, including nuclear weapons. Now, he's used his weapons so far. He's used his Air Force. He's used his infantry and his armor. And he's getting his ass kicked. He's drafting people. You might say, wow, if he can get 300,000 more troops in there, he'll overwhelm them. Except that the guys, they've interviewed some of these guys, they've been drafted, and they're already getting sent into Ukraine. They have no training. If you take a guy off the street and you don't give him training, and maybe you give him a weapon or something, and you send him into a war zone, that's pretty much the very definition of cannon fodder. And so that's why the Russian men are fleeing Russia like crazy, because they see how it's going to work. And they say, we don't want to go in there and fight the Ukrainians. They'll kill us. You know, I mean, and the Ukrainians are going to have no choice about this. They're defending themselves. So whatever Russia sends in showing up in Russian uniforms, they're going to shoot you. And so they're not going to say, oh, well, these are just people with no training, but they're people with guns, and they're from the opposite side, and they're coming after you. You kill them. So this is a great big mess, and oh, man, you know, who knows what's going to happen. If they is something going to – they're signing things. They signed some stuff, I believe, already, and – this weekend, I think they're going to be doing more things. Now, see, that's like a buffer there. Oh, we have some more things to do with these new provinces of Russia. So maybe it will be that they'll say, well, oh boy, look at this. These are provinces, but they're not official yet. So, you know, if you're going to bomb them, we're not going to nuke you. But, oh boy, look at this. We're getting closer and closer to making this, you know, really officially, fully a part of Russia. Is that what he's going to do? He's going to play it like that? Because that's too childish. And, you know, and the Russians are going to see through that too. Not that he has to worry about an election or anything, but the people around him are going to see through this, not just his flunkies who already know what the hell they're doing, but the general populace of Russia. If it starts getting really unpopular, which obviously the draft is, what could happen? What could happen? I mean, they've already had people throwing Molotov cocktails at recruiting centers and going to a draft board and shooting the place up. Somebody gonna maybe put a nice weapon next to Vladimir himself? Who knows? But he's certainly worried about that, because if you're going to be a Russian dictator, you got to be worried about that. Just look at Russian history. So we have this bizarre situation. Is it this thing of, oh, we're going to extend this out and keep threatening? Or is it going to be, oh, well, you know, maybe next week or the week after? Well, you've wiped out one of our units in this town and you took it back. And we say that was you attacking Russia, so have a nuke. What do we do? I don't think we go to DEFCON 1 and say, let's push some buttons and take him out. Maybe what we do is find a couple of his boomers and sink them. These are very dangerous times we're living in. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. Well, as we all know, Radio's Pickles of the North is of the North. And so she went journeying way up north, and she's been there for most of the past week, and she wants to tell us a little bit about this adventure.
Yeah, I haven't seen my parents in almost 3 years, so I decided to get on a plane and go see them, because the train isn't running, the bus takes too long during a pandemic, and flying seems like a safer way to go. Everyone had a mask on still, although I believe the mask mandate on planes in Canada goes away today, October 1st. But when I was on the plane, it was still there. I hate flying for many reasons. I love seeing NASA blast those rockets up. Don't like blasting up myself or blasting off myself. So it was very difficult going from living a very isolated life during the pandemic to going out into public, taking subways and buses and planes and cars and all that stuff. But I did it, and I got to see my parents. The pandemic has been very hard on them, and they're both quite elderly now. And it was a hard visit because of that. And, you know, I'm lucky. I've had my parents my entire life. I mean, I am in my mid-60s, and I still have my mommy and daddy. Not a lot of people can say that. But it's been very hard on them. And it was a difficult visit. I mean, but I was glad that I got to go there. I spent most of the time indoors. I did not want to give them COVID. I don't think I did. I think we dodged that bullet. So, yeah, my dad is 89 and my mother is 92. So, and they've made it through the pandemic so far, but they are not the same people that they were 3 years ago. And it makes me feel really sad. At the same time, I'm glad they're still around, and I wish they'd let their children help them more. Unfortunately, that hasn't changed. So, hard visit, hard traveling, and I'm very glad that I am back now, especially in the light of all the talk about nuclear stuff, because I was thinking, well, I better get back and be with my husband for this.
Oh, yeah. We can stand at the window and watch the H-bomb go off over us.
Well, I think that was, if we ever had any kind of warning, we were going to institute the inconstant moon protocols with Uncle Sidney and run off and eat lots of ice cream and dance around and wear tiaras and then run towards the mushroom cloud. I think that was the plan. Some plan. Oh, boy.
I don't know if we'll be able to have time to get the ice cream sodas down. On the other hand, we won't have to worry about the consequences of a guy with diabetes having a whole bunch of ice cream sodas in that case.
That is true. So right now I'm doing the show in my pajamas because I am so tired. But again, happy to be back in Brooklyn. Sad to leave my parents, though, too, even though I am happy to be back in Brooklyn. My mom has dementia now, and I've never had to experience that with someone that I've been that close to. And I know you have, Arpal. You had to deal with that with your mom. It was a different kind. There are many kinds of dementia.
Yeah, my mother had Alzheimer's disease, as they figured out officially in the hospital. My father had a series of strokes for a decade before he died, so he was, you know, not doing too well either. So the two of them were very out of it, and then that was it. And I think it might be helpful if you told people what happened to your mother that caused her problem.
Well, it may be that she had the very beginnings of dementia several months ago, thinking back on it. But the thing that really changed her was she had something called hyponatremia. And this is when you have your sodium levels are very, very low. She has hypertension. She has to control sodium, but it's a fine balance. And if things go awry, your brain ends up swelling up. The cells in your brain don't have enough sodium, and the cells swell. And this can cause cognitive impairment. Not always, but in my mom's case, it has. And now my dad is forgetting stuff. So, yeah, we're worried about the two of them. My youngest brother has been taking care of them as much as they allow him to, because they're still very independent-minded. But it's a difficult thing. I mean, you want to respect somebody's autonomy. At the same time, sometimes it feels like you're watching a car wreck in slow motion. It wasn't exactly a vacation.
Oh, my. NASA has scored this past week. Yeah, I watched this. I watched the DART mission. It's DART stands for Double Asteroid Redirection Test, DART. And what happened was there's this asteroid. It's called Didymos, and it's about 7 million miles away. It was on Tuesday night. And was it Tuesday night? No, it was Monday night. This week, it was Monday night. It was 7 million miles away, and what happened is they want to test the ability to maybe change the course of an asteroid. There are various different suggestions for how this might be done, and one of them is smack it. Of course, there are other, you know, in the movies, it's, oh, we'll send a bunch of guys who don't know anything, and we'll put them in spacesuits, and they'll drill holes in this iron asteroid. You know, you would be able to tell that the asteroid is ferrite, which I don't know if ferrite really occurs like that in space. Anyway, and it's this super dense asteroid. And they would go up there and plant a nuke in it and blow it up, and Bruce Willis would be the hero. But, yeah, those kinds of things are just that's a lot of make-believe. And I suppose nuking one could possibly be an idea. Probably better than nuking each other down here. But there are various different things. One idea would be to take a particularly heavy spacecraft and have it go very near the asteroid, and the gravitational attraction between the two would deviate the asteroid a bit, and then you move the heavy spacecraft off a little bit more, and by doing that, you would gradually change the course of the asteroid, and it would miss the Earth. Another idea is to paint part of an asteroid, And that way, the solar pressure, the radiation pressure, may very well divert the asteroid enough to change its course, etc. There are all these different ideas. And in space, there is an asteroid called Didymos, and it has a satellite, a moonlet, as some people like to call it, and that's called Dimorphos. So Dimorphos goes around it. It orbits Didymos, and they're going through space like that. And so one idea was, what would happen if we changed the smaller asteroid, if we changed the satellite, if we made its orbit a little bit different? Wouldn't that change the trajectory of the bigger asteroid? And so this kind of thing is one more idea for how to not get smacked by a monster asteroid, the way the dinosaurs did. And yeah, we wouldn't fare much better than the dinosaurs if a 6 mile in diameter asteroid came slamming down on the Earth again. And so they set about this, and that's why they came up with, and that's why they call it, double asteroid redirection test. And they sent this up a long time ago. What was it, last year or sometime? And they shot it up there in a rocket, and it's going there. And the idea was to influence the big asteroid, Didymos, by changing the orbit of the little one, Dimorphos. And the way to do that is to check its momentum, because it has a certain momentum going around. And the way to do that is to smack it head on. And that's what they did with this spacecraft. And it was a fairly heavy thing. They described it as being like a vending machine, about the size and weight of a vending machine, which means, yeah, it's probably like 200 pounds of stuff. But it was 200 pounds of stuff that was moving at about 14,000 miles an hour, which means, oh boy, if you were to hit something, if you were to hit a truck with a vending machine at 14,000 miles an hour, well, the truck would just disintegrate from that kind of force. And so they aimed it at the Dimorphos, and oh boy, I was watching this on TV, and there was a lot of drama. And they, as they would get to their various points, they'd all cheer. And eventually, after a bit, the robots take over. They get it to a certain point. It's really centered. It's going at it. You can see this dot of light, and it gets a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. It's really going toward it. And then they said, okay, now the AI has it and keeps going, and you see the thing getting bigger, and there's one final shot of the surface of Dimorphos. And it's all, you know, rocky crap. Looks like sort of a crummy pebble beach, you know. And it hits it, and everybody cheers because it hit it. And they still have to take a couple of weeks at least, maybe more than a couple of weeks, to see what the orbit of Didymos is. And if, you know, there was no threat. There was no threat from Didymos. And again, it was 7 million miles away, and they just wanted to see if they could do this. Could they affect it? And so we don't know yet, but it's very highly probable that they are going – this is going to show that you can do this, that it will affect the bigger asteroid and change its course. So they hit the thing. They hit the smaller one, Dimorphos, and they were illustrating what would happen. It'd be stuff flying off it as it gets hit. And I'm wondering what the composition of Dimorphos was, because looking at it, it might not have been that solid. It might have been what's referred to as a rubble pile asteroid. A rubble pile asteroid isn't like, you know, the moon, which is this big solid hunk of rock. A rubble pile is a bunch of little chunks of space junk flying out there. And, you know, over billions of years, they come together and there's no air in space. There's no friction. So all this stuff just keeps going along. It didn't have to be aerodynamic or anything. And it comes zooming along, no problem. But if you were to try to dig into it, it would just be like a big ball of rock and sand. And I'm wondering if they're going to be able to figure out if the if Dimorphos was a rubble pile or something more solid. It could also be a solid one that has a surface that's got a lot of rubble on it. There was an Italian space probe following on, and I think they have a picture of stuff flying off as the dart hit it. But I don't know. I haven't seen information about that, and I don't know. They may have to still be processing their data. But we're going to find out what goes on with this particular situation here, and then I think that's going to prove to be okay. Because if they didn't see the probe or a lot of stuff coming out the back end of the asteroid, then that's a good thing. Because coming out the back end of the asteroid would actually mean it's kind of being propelled forward a little bit. But if it's throwing all the debris forward in a direction that the dart came from, then that means it has lost all of that momentum. And it's going to be getting closer to Didymos and will change its direction. So that's how that works. And this is a very serious issue because there are folks looking around to try and stop an asteroid from smacking into us. I mentioned the dinosaurs. And so what's happening is you have the B612 Foundation, which is named after another asteroid. Asteroid B612 is named after the little prince in Saint-Exupéry's book. And so they've named their nonprofit the B612 Foundation. There's a Dr. Ed Liu at it. And they are looking and watching near-Earth asteroids and all of this. And there's a piece from the Times from a little bit ago about this particular kind of activity that they're going on about here. And what happens is there's the Vera Rubin telescope. And it's a telescope that's the Vera Rubin Observatory. This is a telescope. And the telescope is 8.4 meters in diameter, which is a big telescope. And they are looking out for asteroids. However, the asteroids mostly that they're seeing are the ones in the asteroid belt. And they're trying to figure out what to do about the near-Earth asteroids, because there are asteroids that are not in the belt, but some of them are called Apollo objects. They cross the Earth's orbit. And there's actually one asteroid that sort of follows and leads the Earth. It's in an orbit where it's a horseshoe. For a while, it's in front of the Earth in the orbit, and then it goes around the entire orbit, and then it comes in up in back of the Earth. It never hits the Earth, but it just oscillates that, going back and forth in the Earth's orbit like that. It's a very strange thing. And that we probably don't have to worry about. But there are other objects that come by, like Eros is about 8 miles long. What killed the dinosaurs was about 6 miles. So if Eros ever hit the Earth, oh boy. Anyway, they're using new algorithms to try and track these asteroids. In this article in the Times by Kenneth Chang, they're talking about this algorithm that's predicting these things. Now, what they are already doing mostly is tracking the asteroid belt asteroids. In 2005, Congress passed a mandate for NASA to locate and track 90% of the near-Earth asteroids with diameters of 460 feet or more by the end of 2020. But Congress never provided the money that NASA would need to accomplish this. And the deadline passed with less than half of those asteroids found. So we have other people stepping up to try and deal with this kind of thing. And they're using their new algorithms. When they track a single object for a night, they call it a tracklet, the astronomers. And so their new algorithm is called the Tracklet-Less Heliocentric Orbit Recovery, or THOR. Zeljko Evezik, who's the director of this telescope and an author on a recent paper that described THOR and tested it against observations, said, "This is showing nicely how the landscape is changing. The ecosystem of science is changing because software now can do things that 20, 30 years ago you could not even dream about. You would not even think about it." So they're able to track some stuff, and they're hoping to track more. The asteroid belt asteroids move slowly compared to the near-Earth asteroids. Those move fast, so it's a bigger challenge to do it. So, yep, this is another thing. It's called planetary defense, and it's good that they did this, and I hope it worked out. Here comes the BAI pitching bicycle. Woohoo! Here we come. Okay, yeah, it's time. It's time to pitch, folks. And, oh boy, we got a pitch here. What we're doing is, we should sell everybody, WBAI is listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio. That means we rely on you, the listeners, to keep us going, to help us pay our bills. And we have a lot of bills to pay. We've got rent. It's like, what is it, $5,300 a month for the studios? The tower rent at Fort Times Square, where we have our transmitter there and we hook up to their antenna system, that costs almost $17,000 a month. And, oh boy, the rest of Pacifica doesn't have expenses like this because they're in other kinds of places where you can set up an antenna if you please. But we don't have that option. We're in New York City. So we have these bills that others don't have. Well, the thing is, we have to ask you to help us out. We have to ask you to send us money. And what we're really pitching right now is sustaining memberships in WBAI. And we call that becoming a BAI buddy. And to become a BAI buddy, you call 1-212-209-2950. And when the person at the call center picks up, you say, "You want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book." It's important to mention the name of the radio program because that way, you know, we get credit for it, and that's important. And I'll tell you about that in a second. And so that'll work out, and you tell them how much you want to be billed for every month. And you give them your credit card number or your debit card number, and you tell them how much you want to be billed for. You can be billed for $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more than that if you want, but I think that's the range most listeners will go for. And so you tell them how much you want to be billed for every month, and then you tell them what day of the month you want to be billed for this. That way you don't get the bill happening, hitting your credit card or debit card at a time that's inconvenient, and that can happen. So 1-212-209-2950, please give them a call at that number. Call up the call center and say, "You want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book." By doing that, you will be helping us to pay our rent and other things. We have a lot of bills here at BAI, but the rent bills are the big things. And, you know, we're behind on both the studio rent and the tower rent. And we can't get too far behind, especially on a tower rent, because they'll just turn us off and you won't hear us anymore. They really will do that.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
And so 1-212-209-2950. Now, we haven't gotten a lot of folks to call in. Now, Tony called in a couple of months ago, but I think we haven't really had people calling in too much. And so now we are getting preempted every fourth program. Coincidence? You figure it out. 1-212-209-2950. And you also, by calling that number and pledging some amount of money on a monthly basis, you will also be saying to management, the overnights have listeners. Because, again, they're thinking about, you know, midnight to 6 a.m., nobody listens to those programs. There's no money coming in from those programs. How about we just, you know, rent out the station between midnight and 6. This is a proposal, and some people would like to do it. It's just been talked about, usually by some listeners at this point. But, hey, that's kind of dangerous talk for overnights. 1-212-209-2950. Could we please get some folks calling in and saying, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book? 1-212-209-2950. If we can get some folks calling in like that, it will really, really help us a lot. 1-212-209-2950. And that will help Back of the Book, certainly, and will help BAI somewhat, too. 1-212-209-2950. Yeah, at this hour, we're not going to get enough of you to save the whole station, but we could get some of you to save Back of the Book, to say, yeah, there are listeners to this strange radio program. We do the science stuff, and we will do the black holes. We do various political things. We tell you about our personal lives. We can't be live anymore. This was supposed to be a free-form live radio program, and it was until the pandemic hit. The last time we were able to do a live program was March 7th of 2020. And now it's been more than 2.5 years that we can't go in because the station is still locked down at those hours. 1-212-209-2950. And quite frankly, we're concerned about riding the subway at 4 o'clock in the morning with all the crazy people who are committing homicides and throwing folks in the tracks. So that's a worry, too. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. Give us a call. We seriously need to hear from at least some of you. 1-212-209-2950. Could we please get some of you to call up? And you get a tote bag. When you become a BAI buddy, you get a WBAI tote bag, and management is saying they're going to maybe put some stuff in the tote bag. They're not going to, you know, put gold bars in the tote bag or something, but you might get some damn thing or another in there. 1-212-209-2950. We really got to hear from a few of you right now. We got to hear from some people. And again, if you do pledge, please write to me, rpm@glib.com. That's rpm@glib.com, and say, yeah, I pledged. And just let us know that so we can make sure that management knows that. Will bug management. And so, yeah, 1-212-209-2950. You'll be helping WBAI to stay on the air, and you'll be helping Back of the Book to stay on WBAI. Okay, final time, 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. Here's a little piece that we had to cut out of the last program for time. We're sticking it in this time. I hope you enjoy it. We've seen all the stuff with the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II and all of that. And parts of the Fountain Pen Network are all a-Twitter about the new king, King Chucky III, saying, oh, the pen, it's leaking. Every stinking time, and charging off, having a little hissy fit about his fountain pen leaking. Apparently, he uses a Mont Blanc, and there's a full analysis online of what pen he uses, what pen his mother used. But yes, it's certainly gotten itself really as a big topic up on the Fountain Pen Network, and I just thought I'd mention that. It's kind of amusing. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. We're scheduled to be here again next week. Coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
All right. It should be raining like crazy as you listen to this, so stay dry. And above all, remember what that getting his tinfoil hat ready to meet the next asteroid Dormouse said.
I'm Francesca D'Alessio with the WBAI Community Bulletin Board. On October 1st, from 4 to 6 p.m., the Arts Students League of New York and New York City AIDS Memorial are hosting a free open-air sketch event at the New York City AIDS Memorial Park at St. Vincent's Triangle, Greenwich Avenue at West 12th Street, from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 1st. For more information, please go to their website, theartstudentsleague.org. Also on October 1st, Sisters in Purple kick off Domestic Violence Awareness Month with the second annual march. Meet at 11 a.m. on West 145th Street at Malcolm X Boulevard and Lenox Avenue. March from Harlem to the Bronx, raising awareness about domestic violence. For more information, go to sistersinpurple@gmail.com. Again, that's sistersinpurple@gmail.com. And on Sunday, there's a Disability Pride Parade and Festival. The parade will start at 10 a.m. at Madison Square Park and will proceed down Broadway to Union Square Park. The mission of the Disability Pride New York City Parade is to promote inclusion, awareness, and visibility of the disability community. For more information, please visit their website, disabilitypridenyc.org. Again, the website is disabilitypridenyc.org, or send them an email at dpnycinfo@gmail.com. Again, that's dpnycinfo@gmail.com. Also on Sunday, there's a teach-in planned by Diffuse Nuclear War. October 2022 marks the 60th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis, when the Soviet Union and the U.S. engaged in a tense standoff over the installation of nuclear weapons in Cuba. It is widely considered the closest the two superpowers ever came to nuclear war. Until now. Diffuse Nuclear War says while the dangers of nuclear war have risen sharply this year, very few members of the House and Senate have risen to the occasion by speaking out or publicly urging measures to de-escalate tensions between nuclear powers and seriously revive negotiations for nuclear weapons treaties and disarmament measures. The group is holding a live stream event on Sunday at 2 p.m. Speakers include Daniel Ellsberg, Norman Solomon, Alice Slater, and many more. You can find out more by going to diffusenuclearwar.org. And there's a book talk called Organize, Fight, Win. Brings together three decades of Black communist women's political writing. This is with Dr. Charisse Burdenstelly, Jody Dean, and Claudia De La Cruz. In person and online. Saturday, October 1st at 5 p.m. at the People's Forum, 320 West 37th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues. On Sunday, Clean Coney Creek Shore. That's happening Sunday, October 1st at 9:30 a.m. For more information, please call Nancy Woods at 917-301-0787. Again, that's 917-301-0787. 0787. And for more information around the New York State Beach Cleanup future dates, please give them a call, 718-869-3488. The Emergency Committee for Iranian Women's Struggle, Women Life Freedom, is organizing global protests on Sunday, October 2nd. Defend Rojava is a woman-led uprising in Kurdistan and Iran, sparked by the brutal murder of the 22-year-old Kurdish woman. Stand with the Emergency Committee for Iranian Women's Struggle, noon at Washington Square Park. For more information, please go to their website, defendrojava.org.